the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark, which is me, and also Gary Stark, who did the Sunday Night Live. He's over there.
Where?
There.
Oh, here I am.
Yeah. And this is the Gadget Grill, technology put down in easy terms, served up nicely on a hot plate with pancakes and maple syrup and all sorts of fun stuff. So, yeah, welcome to the Gadget Grill. If you have any comments, questions, or anything about what we're talking about tonight, you can head to www.gadgetgrill.com.au. The site is kind of half up at the moment, but you can find basically the entire story that we're talking about tonight on there. Easy to use.
Indeed, indeed. Welcome. Congratulations, Lee. Welcome to... This is Lee's first show under his own banner. And
yes, the only tech journo in the country.
And we wish you well here on to RDJ-FM, where we're going to be first with all of the technical news. What have you got lined up for tonight, please, Lee?
Well, tonight we're actually talking about cameras, because this is coming close to the holiday season, and I know personally, being a camera freak, that cameras are high on everyone's list of stuff for Christmas for buying things. So we're going to talk about the megapixel myth, because this is something that's been perpetuated by electronic salespeople and people who just generally don't understand it, that megapixels means better images, and that's just simply not the case. So we're going to explain just basics of how it works. You can head to the website at gadgetgrill.com.au to find more about it. But we're also going to look at a game tonight. We're going to look at Mirror's Edge, which is a completely amazing game that's just come out from Electronic Arts, where you basically use a method of running and jumping called parkour. It's very, very thrilling to watch. I'll be letting Dad watch that while... That's my dad, Gary. I'll be letting him watch it while I talk about it, so he can make comments about it as well. And we've even got some news coming up.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. But first up, we've got a little bit of music, I believe.
We do.
Which is... Fro?
No, I think it's Frau Fro. I don't actually know.
Okay, well, let's have a listen to some music anyway.
And welcome back to the Gadget Grill. This is your host, Lee Stark, with Gary.
Indeed.
And we're going to look at some news right now, because there's always news every week. And this week, the news is especially DRM and digital rights management and privacy filled. So we're going to take a look at USB sticks, because... they might replace your CDs, apparently. Probably not. This week, Sneaky Sound System had their new release of Sneaky Sound System 2, from what I remember it's called, under USB sticks. This is called DDA, or digital album technology, basically. Digital albums. I'm sure there's another D in there for some reason. And this is basically music on a USB stick designed so that you plug it into your computer and you move it across to iTunes immediately. This is an attempt to get around what's seen as digital rights management or protection over CDs. The question is, would you really want to replace your CD with a USB stick?
I see it. In some respects, yes, I see storing your digital media, getting your digital media in the form of a USB stick or an SD card or a compact flash card, I see that as being the way of the future. And I see that particularly in the case of perhaps... movies, as the storage mediums get bigger, storage media gets bigger, and you get your movies on that. In terms of music, I'm not sure, because how many USB sticks are you going to want to carry around with you?
That's the other question. I mean, how many cars have USB slots in the radio stations? I mean, you're just beginning to see them make their way in, and how many people have stereo systems still that just have a CD player in them?
That's right.
I mean, the half of this is also... I mean, we're talking about just for convenience, but... CDs are of a particular quality, and we're talking the ability to play back at a proper 44.1 kilohertz or a 48 kilohertz stream, and I'm betting, we haven't got one in yet, we're going to try and get one in for next week, I'm betting that these are recorded at such a level that they're great for the iPod, but not great for a whole lot else.
That's what I'm thinking as well, and of course the other problem with it is that you do need to have some sort of medium, some sort of device that is going to read that memory stick. Everybody's got a CD player. A lot of people have got computers, but not everybody. Your grandmother doesn't have a computer, for instance, and she doesn't want to get one, but she likes listening to music, and she likes listening to it on CDs.
In fact, both my grandmothers know what CD player is, but if they were, I mean, they're probably unlikely to listen to Sneaky Sound System, but for what it's worth, they're unlikely also to want to have any of these USB sticks in their home. But anyway, moving on, the net filter, the dreaded net filter, which a lot of geeks and people who love the internet are really not looking forward to. Protests are going to be happening, it looks like, across the country next weekend on December 13th.
Tell me more about that, please.
Okay, well, the net filter is one of the things we're all a bit unsure about. Basically, it's a two-tiered system to stop... The idea is to stop pedophilia and, well, basically anything nasty.
Okay, so we're talking censorship of the internet.
Censorship of the internet. But it has a flaw, because censorship of the internet, in this instance, is a system that basically says... You cannot look at anything that the government deems illegal. And there are two tiers to this. There is one where everything that the government deems is illegal is automatically started to be banned, and everyone is opted into that. And then the next, and then you can be taken off that list, but then you're still technically somewhat controlled. And this actually hampers the internet to a degree. We'll be talking to someone about this next year, early next year, from bannersurl.com, because this really has the potential to not just change the way we all look at the web, but hamper us to such a degree where our speeds for internet speeds, anything you love for broadband, just drops to such a ridiculous level.
It does. I actually have a very serious problem with censorship. I just have a fundamental objection to censorship. I'm an adult. I know what I like. And I don't need Big Brother looking over my shoulder telling me what the hell I can or can't see or do. I accept that there are problems with pedophilia, but this is not the right answer. This is not going to address the problems of pedophilia. Somebody who is warped, they see things where we don't see them, and that's a problem with them. And why the hell does the government, you know, step in where, well, it thinks it should, but it can't, and as you say, it's just not going to work.
It goes further than this to a degree, because I was actually talking about this with the guys, with some of the guys from CNET and Atomic, which are more electronic sites on the web. We were talking about this on Thursday night, and we basically figured that anyone who's using a pedophilia website, I don't like them, I don't really want to think about them, but they're not using a website per se, they're using some other means of technology that wouldn't even be bothered or concerned with the filter. So the filter is, in terms of what everyone on the web is doing, useless.
It just doesn't work, and it's going to slow things down, it's not going to do the job. All the stuff that they're going to try and block, you know as well as I do that we can get around that very, very easily, and it's not going to be able to stop stuff that that doesn't come through through the standard means. You set up a proxy overseas and bring your stuff in like that.
Speaking real terms for regular people, Dad.
Okay.
Just quickly.
Those people who want to get around it will find a way to get around it, and the government will be found, the government's measures will be found to be a waste of time and a waste of your money and a waste of my money.
Not to say that the protests will actually do anything. I mean, this is our government we're talking about. Since when do protests actually
what
make
government?
A difference? Since when do protests make a difference? Regardless, the rallies are next Saturday at 11 a.m., basically in every major city across the country. One final piece of news. This is for gamers. Spore, the Will Wright masterpiece, which is said to be a masterpiece where you could create life out of basically primordial stages all the way up to your own evolutionary being, has become the most pirated game this year. And there's a reason why. Everyone knows it, or everyone in the gaming community does anyway, and that's because of digital rights management. And digital rights management is, just like the USB stick we were talking about with Sneaky Sound System, a way of controlling how people do things. And when it's a strange thing with Spore. It got leaked in Australia early, and as a result, technically Australia was the reason Spore became the most pirated game of the year. But it's not a good thing for companies, especially a company like Electronic Arts, who distribute Spore, to come along and say, this is how you can play the game. We will embed registration entries into your computer. It's essentially spyware and a bad way of treating the customer.
Absolutely it is. Music?
Music.
And this is?
This is... Who are you playing?
I'm going to play Cartoon Capers.
Well, this is Cartoon Capers. We've lost. This is the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark and Gary Stark on 88.1 2RDJ FM, also available on www.radio2rdj.com. And if you want to find any information about anything we're talking about tonight, I'll be writing it later on based off what we've talked about now on www.gadgetgrill.com.au. And right now we're going to break some myths. I mean, this is the Christmas season, the Hanukkah Christmas season, and I know a lot of people, and I know from working in technology, that cameras are a big thing this holiday season because there are so many out there. I mean, you talk about phone cameras. Everyone's got a phone camera, and in the case of people like my dad and myself, we have crap phone cameras. So we have to account for that by having a decent camera. Well, that's not really the reason, but it helps.
We've had decent cameras for a long time, and what am I going to say? How can I say it?
We know our stuff.
A pox on all phone cameras.
Not all. There are actually the Sony, I think it's the C905, the new one. That's actually pretty good for what it's worth. And the LG Renoir, we'll get to that one next week for something else. That's actually not a bad camera, so he's not quite up to
I will
scratch.
Defer to your greater knowledge
yes,
on
you
these
will.
Matters.
So tonight we're talking about the megapixel myth, which is something electronics resellers, people who work at, I'm not going to name stores, but you probably know the ones you walk in. They're like, how can I help you? And they have no idea what they're on about. There are loads of them. I've walked into them and have had to act in their place when people have turned around and asked me for some advice.
Would you like to have a fridge with your phone camera?
Yeah, it's basically that. We're not talking about phone cameras tonight. Instead, we're actually going to talk about compact digital cameras and early, like, beginner digital SLRs, which is a single-lens reflex camera, often seen as a professional camera. Quotes go around those things. Professional camera.
I love the term professional camera.
A professional camera is a loose term for anything that has an attachable lens, and that's a really loose term because a professional camera doesn't mean a professional will use it.
I love loose terms.
Indeed. And with megapixels, all right, we'll start this from the beginning. 4 megapixels, 4 or 5 megapixels.
What is a megapixel? Let's start there.
Oh, I can't tell you what a megapixel is. It's, what is it?
It's a measurement of the resolution of a sensor. It tells you what the sensor can see. The theory is, or the myth is, that the higher the number, the better the photo that you're going to get.
The problem with this is that there's a lot more to a camera than just the higher the number megapixel. If any electronics seller, salesman ever tells you that the megapixel, higher megapixel is better camera, they're lying through their teeth, or they have no idea what they're on about, possibly both.
Probably the latter.
So what also is inside of a camera is primarily what you need to think about is the actual sensor, how good a quality is, as well as the type of lens it's using. There's a rule traditionally that a lot of camera people, myself and my dad included, that use. And it's basically buy a camera made by a camera company.
Yes. Would you buy a car that was made by a fridge manufacturer?
Oh, it depends. Did it come with a fridge? How many cup holders did it come with?
Well, that's an important point too, of course.
They're refrigerated cup holders if it's made by a fridge company.
Yes, they would be, and they would not hold your cup of coffee because they're not made to hold coffee cups.
Of course not.
Therefore, if you wouldn't buy a car made by a fridge manufacturer, the question is, would you buy a camera made by somebody who makes stereos, for instance?
Well, there's a yes and no sort of thing to this. I mean, there are a couple of companies that have really proven their worth, one of which is Panasonic. But in this instance, Panasonic have done their part because they've bought Leica and they've adapted the technology. So companies like Canon, Nikon, Pentax, Olympus, and Leica, or in this instance Panasonic, are all fantastic options for cameras because in this instance, we're talking about lens quality, and the lens quality, which is the glass that you shoot through on these cameras, really does make a difference. So it's not just the megapixels.
I want to shoot through a Coke bottle.
Well, you can, but we won't go into that here. It's a little in-joke that I'm not allowed to talk about. Just be assured, if you look for Coke bottle and lens on Google, you'll find plenty to work with.
Yes.
However, megapixels are not the big thing they used to be. These days, you can't really get a camera that's under 4 or 5 megapixel. And for what it's worth, 4 or 5 megapixel, in case you're looking for a guide, will print you up a postcard size, which is the traditional printing measurement for most people.
Go to your local chemist or photo lab, you will get a postcard size photo.
What's what we call a 4x6.
And pretty much any camera that you buy is going to give you a good photo there. If the shop assistant tries to tell you that you need to get a 10 megapixel camera because it's going to take better photos, well, the first thing I'm going to say is the camera doesn't take the photos. You do. The second thing that I'm going to say is that if you're only going to ever print postcard-sized photos that you're going to send to Aunt Mabel and Uncle Fred, then it doesn't make a blind bit of difference.
It's also not just about the postcard photos. For instance, 4 or 5 megapixel, which, as I said, is the minimum you can really buy these days. I mean, earlier this week, I saw a 7 megapixel Canon for a little bit over $100, which is not
good
bad.
Value.
Yeah, pretty good value. And look around. You'll probably see this thing at places. That will give you an A4 photo, which is an 8x10.
Effectively.
That will give you an 8x10 effectively without a problem, and it will look great. So we're talking about megapixels these days. It means absolutely nothing.
Do not worry about them at all. Go out, ignore what the salesperson tells you. That's always a good thing to do. Go out, play with the camera. See how the camera feels in your hand. Does it feel comfortable for you to use? Is it good for you?
This is important to note. I mean, we're being pretty vague in how this works for the most part, because cameras are a really hard thing to do. It's not like a phone. You know, you want a phone to make phone calls. We'll get into that one next week.
Oh, dear. Yeah. There's a concept.
You want a phone to make phone calls. A camera should be an extension of your body, and about the only time where it's not an extension of your body is when you're going out and drinking and shooting randomly and hoping you don't lose it. I know friends who have expensive cameras. They spend $700 or $800 on point and shoots, and they lose them in the space of a drunken night, and that's a waste, because if you're going to do that,
so many new cameras that way.
Oh, yeah, you go for the cheap ones if you're going to do something like that. It's not going to make a difference at night. The extra features in digital cameras, like low ISO or high ISO in this case, means 1600, 3200, 6400 ISOs, ability to shoot at night. However, there's a drawback. You still probably won't get those shots without flash if you're going to a nightclub. It just doesn't work the way people think it does.
ISO, by the way, is the way that camera manufacturers and people in photography measure the sensitivity. The higher the ISO number, then the better it might be able to work with less light.
There is a catch to that, however, which is something Dad's not talking about.
Noise. Am I noisy?
Yeah, you're beginning to piss me off.
Thank you.
Noise, when the higher you make your ISO, so the better it is in low light, the more noise, which is basically pixels for the most part, the more noisy and ugly your image begins to look. So shooting in low light environment, if it's controlled low light and you know what you're doing, or the camera is helping you along, there are a lot of guided modes in a lot of the professional professional camera companies. I'd say professional camera companies, because they're really beginning to make these cameras usable for beginners.
Yes, they are. They make them just better and better and better.
In those sorts of instances, the noise is controlled to such a level where it's harder to notice. But in a lot of cameras, even if you shoot at 16 or 3200, you get an unusable image. So high ISO, high-speed cameras, good for low light, still a dodgy area. What you just want to be comfortable with when you're looking for a new camera isn't the megapixel myth. It is instead just finding a camera that you like the look of and you're comfortable with the price.
On the subject of unusable images, that's pretty much what I take, isn't it?
Yeah, for the most part. Straight out of the camera. Great. No. The Gadget Grill with Lee Stark and Gary Stark. Gadget Technology on 2RDJ 88.1 FM. That was Dave Brubeck from the Starbucks. Is it live at Starbucks?
Live at Starbucks, Park Avenue, New York.
Park Avenue South. That's the name of the actual disc. It's one of my favorite discs at home. I think I bought it, and you basically never gave it back to me.
That's right.
Yeah. That is one of the best tracks. It's one of the best versions of Take 5, which is one of the best tracks in the history of Jazzkind. Anyway, next we're looking at games. And with this game, we're going to take a look at an Electronic Arts game. It's pretty big. It's pretty cool. It's Mirror's Edge, which is a game unlike any other game you've probably ever played. In fact, in Dad's case, he hasn't played really any game, so it's unlike every game he's played.
That's not entirely true. I do play Solitaire.
Okay, fine, you play Solitaire. And at one point, Dad actually played Half-Life, which is probably one of the better first-person shooters, and he occasionally plays a couple racing games. Mirror's Edge is a game that takes place in a dystopian future. It's basically very Orwellian for you. A world gone mad, government controls everything. Sounds a lot like what we were talking about earlier. And in this future, everything, all the communication is controlled by the government. Very much like what we were talking about earlier, strangely. To circumvent this, a group of runners, well, what these people are called, they run on the rooftops. They jump from rooftop to rooftop, on walls, across edges, basically risking their lives to get communication across. And that's where you come in. You play a girl named Faith, who is about to basically have a really bad couple of days. Her sister is about to get framed for murder, and you're going to try and get her out of it. And it is this setup that really creates this amazing world of running and jumping and working your way through the game. And Dad saw me playing this for the past few months while it's been in development, and it is one of those superbly designed games. Dad, what do you think?
It's interesting to watch you play it. Of course, the level of activity that it promotes is something that I'm totally uncomfortable with and is totally foreign to me.
Why so?
When was the last time you saw me run?
Well, this is a problem, and this is a game available only for the PlayStation 3, Xbox 360 at the moment, and in January it'll be available for the PC, which will be very fun, we think. The idea of the game is that you run. You run, you jump, you occasionally kick and punch, and sometimes you can even disarm a cop. You can fire if you want the gun. The game doesn't technically encourage it. It more or less wants you to disarm them, throw the gun away, and move on. So be as quick as you can. And it's a enormously fun game to play. It's very simple to get into. The techniques of running and jumping off walls actually come from a sport, I think you could say it, called parkour, which people actually do.
They had an article about that on, I think it might have been a Current Affair just the other day, which probably illustrates the level of seriousness with which I would treat that sport.
Why so?
A Current Affair.
Don't take a Current Affair. This is, I wouldn't say it's a sport. It's an urban sport, per se. People in this city and probably in other cities around the world run off walls. They can climb up walls very quickly. This is a thing that people love doing, and this game captures it really well. I've never done parkour before, and quite frankly, I'd fear for my life. If you're interested in learning about parkour, I think the spelling of this is P-A-R-K-O-U-R. Yeah, Google this. It's not for the faint of heart if you're...
It's running sideways along a wall.
Well, no, it's more than that. But the game replicates that sort of part of it well. And it's more to it than that for the game. There's a running mode in the game where you can compete with others. It's one of those really fantastic games that is going to be competing for Game of the Year for a lot of people. It's got fantastic graphics and a level design that is phenomenal. Its only real downsides are, one, it treats you really, it's a sort of like a patronizing game at points. You'll die and start from a section way far back that you just wish you hadn't gone back to. Some of the puzzles are just completely out there. And it's got a really repetitive level design, which is kind of a shame. You sort of, this is not a spoiler, up to about level 7, it's all like this. You do some recon, and then some cops find you, and you run for your life. But if you can survive that for at least the first 7 levels, you'll make it through the remaining 2 and love every minute of it. It's one of those games that I highly recommend people to play. So that's Mirror's Edge, and up now we've got a track which is actually from it. I can't actually pronounce the name of the person, Lisa Muzovsky, I think. She sings the theme song, and this is a remix.
Lisa Miskovsky.
Miskovsky. She sings the theme song, which is actually used in the trailer. If you search on Google Mirror's Edge and YouTube, you'll find the trailer for this. You can see just how pretty it is. We'll have a review on gadgetgrill.com.au later on tonight, hopefully. If not, it'll be there tomorrow morning. Anyway, this is the Still Alive Junkie XL remix, if I remember. 88.1 2RDJ, this is the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark and Gary Stark, and that was from the Mirror's Edge soundtrack, a remix of the main theme song Still Alive, this one done by Junkie XL. It's actually a really cool song, that one. We just got a listener-requested question. It's a listener-requested question. If you actually go to gadgetgrill.com.au, which is the makeshift site at the moment for the show, you can actually hit the About page, and or the About page, rather, and add contact@gadgetgrill.com.au to your MSN and ask questions to us live on the air. We'll try and answer them. This is a listener-requested question. Jeff from Freshwater. Sorry about that. Jeff from Freshwater asks, LCD or plasma? And the catch here is that which do you prefer, color fidelity or inexpensive price? I personally prefer color fidelity, but the color fidelity that a plasma gives you, which is more accurate, is actually, or it comes at a cost of, it's worse for the environment, and it actually uses more energy. It'll also have a shelf life, or a half life, basically. It will die in a certain time period, I think, when the gas runs out from plasma, whereas an LCD, which is much more inexpensive and has usually somewhat better contrast ratios, has a different sort of color. These days, the color is actually, you know, it's pretty on par. It's hard to really tell the difference between them. I still personally prefer plasma. LCDs are less expensive, though, and they do use a lot less electricity. It really depends on how much you want to spend. Most people these days will end up with something like a Samsung, a Sony, a Panasonic. They're all fantastic options. The cheaper LCDs that you can find under names you've probably never heard of, the things they lack are a proper color, a proper understanding of color. Basically, blues look faded, reds look reds look faded as opposed to flavored. They all have the same inputs, HDMI components, but they aren't quite as good on color and contrast values. What do you have to say, Dad?
I agree. The faded colors are one thing. You like to have the bright colors, and depends on what your usage is. We're nearly out of time.
We are, and next week we're going to do to iPhone or not to iPhone, basically. We're going to talk about the iPhone and its competitors, because there are good things about it, there are bad things about it. That's next week. Check out www.gadgetgrill.com.au. This is the Hot 8 Brass Band from New Orleans, one of my favorite places in the world. This is What's My Name. See ya.
See ya next week. Have a good week. Bye.